Good evening and welcome to Perspectives by John Pierce. I'm your host. Our engineer this evening is Neil Heaver, our operations director here at WDIY. Glad to have you along with us. Tonight's topic is called Villages in Partnership, and it has to do with an organization that links what's going on in the United States with Malawi in Africa. My two guests are Becky and John Taka, recently retired. Becky was a teacher. Becky, where did you teach?
Well, earlier in my career, I taught in the Parkland School District, a special ed teacher. And then later in my career, I taught English as a second language to adults at the Literacy Center in Allentown.
Oh, that's a great program, yeah. Yes. What a fun career you've had.
Yes, and raised four boys in there too.
Yes. Do you miss the teaching?
I do, but I find my way into teaching in various ways.
Yeah, it's a good statement.
Yeah.
And John Taka, you are a chemist, retired now, but how many years at Air Products and Chemicals?
26 years.
That's a career.
Air Products, yeah.
Yeah. Where did you do your chemistry education?
Well, I got a degree in chemical engineering from Cornell University. And then I got an MBA at night here in Bethlehem at Lehigh University.
All right. Yeah. So are both of you natives of the Lehigh Valley?
No, we're originally from Buffalo, New York.
Oh, you came south.
Yes, we did.
Exactly.
A little warmer here.
Were you looking for a warmer climate?
A little bit.
And now you've been over to Africa, you've got a really warm climate.
Yes, yes.
You've been married almost 42 years. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yes. What's the date, John, that you will be married 42 years?
August 20th.
August 20th. Congratulations for a long marriage. They're long-term members of First Presbyterian Church of Allentown, where, among many other things, Becky has served on the mission team and led the mission action team for the past 4 years. So she is one of the really active members of the church. After retiring, the Takas planned a 3-week trip to Africa, and part of the trip was a visit to an organization that the church in Allentown has been supporting for over a decade, Villages in Partnership, an NGO helping villagers in Malawi out of extreme poverty. So, Becky, tell us how you got interested in this whole project.
Well, like you said, the church has been supporting Villages in Partnership for quite a while now. And so when I came onto the team, did some different projects as to raise money for various things. For example, last year we did a Faithful Waters project where we raised money, and part of the money we gave to Villages in Partnership, and we built 2 wells. And this year we're working on Faithful Housing project, and half of the money we're going to send also over to Villages in Partnership for building some housing. Specifically, it will be probably used to build a dormitory for the girls at the secondary school.
In Malawi.
Yes, in Malawi. The other half of the money we raise, we always keep locally to mission projects here in our local area.
All right, so this has been a passion of yours for a while.
Yes. We were going to go on a safari to Tanzania, and actually I want to give a shout out to Laurel Antanasio because she's from Bethlehem, and she's a yoga teacher, and she organizes trips around the world. And we've always wanted to go to Africa, so we joined in the trip, and it was a wonderful safari. But when I looked at the map, I said to John, I go, wow, Malawi's right next to Tanzania. Maybe we can go to Villages in Partnership. So we kind of talked to various people, and Liz Heinzel-Nelson, the executive director and founder of Villages in Partnership, just happened to be going to be there when we were going to be visiting, and she said, yes, we'd love to have you come. So we made the trip. It wasn't as easy to get there. It looked like it was would be so easy to get there, but it's a lot more difficult than that in Africa because a lot of dirt roads. We end up having to go to South Africa, to Johannesburg for a couple days, and then fly back to Malawi. But we made the trip, and it was well worth it. Yes. Well worth it.
Indeed. So we're talking about Malawi. It's in Southeast Africa. The capital is Lilongwe. Is that the way to pronounce it?
I think that's the capital. Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And their language is English because of colonization. Also, an African language.
Yeah, Chichewa.
Chichewa.
And one thing we should have said to you when we saw you is Mulibanji.
Mulibanji, which means?
How are you? Or we could say thank you. Zikomo.
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 Yeah.
Wonderful sounds.
Yeah.
So in Malawi, population 21 million people. The national animal was listed where I looked it up. Thompson's gazelle. I didn't know Thompson had a gazelle.
We saw a lot of gazelles.
We saw the Thompson gazelle when we were in Tanzania on the safari.
All right. Is there a difference between the Thompson and other gazelles?
If I remember right, the Thompson gazelle had kind of a really dark brown stripe across its belly. We have a million pictures. We took a lot of pictures.
We'll have to look through the picture.
I can look through the pictures and show you the differences from what we saw.
Yeah, the great part about a safari is you shoot and you don't kill anything. You just bring the pictures back with you, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And Malawi, interesting, 87% Christian, 11% Muslim. So that's a different religious setup from most African countries. Mm-hmm. And speaking of taking pictures, when you make presentations, which you do about your trip, you have slides to show. Unfortunately, we can't do that on the radio. Mm-hmm. But you are here today, John, to paint pictures for us.
Okay.
Okay.
So here we go. When you arrived on site, what did you see?
Our first experience in Malawi was landing at the airport in Blantyre. You know, not a very sophisticated airport, to say the least. And we had brought a lot of luggage. It's a 3-week trip. And plus, we also brought a bag of a whole suitcase that we planned to leave behind, suitcase and all, just as gifts for the villagers. And so we had to, they had to check our bags. We had to get through everything. But, Liz Heinzel Nelson, the executive director, met us as we were coming in and helped facilitate us getting through all this and then helped us get into a van. And then she drove us off on the British side of the road, about a 2-hour drive to get to the area where we were going to stay for 2 weeks, for the trip. So I think my first impression of arriving was, this rural airport in what Blantyre is considered to be the commercial capital of the country. But very quickly you look around and, it's just a very different level of existence compared
to. Were there other planes at the airport at the time?
I don't think so. I think we were the only plane that landed at the time.
That's telling and, right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. When we came into the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of automobiles. You're seeing people walk on the road. You know, the whole time we were driving, there were a lot of people walking along the road. But the scenery was absolutely gorgeous, just beautiful. We could see the mountains ahead of us, and it was just really, really pretty there, very pretty.
Right. So here you are arriving in Malawi, and who is there to greet you?
Well, Liz Heinzel Nelson.
She was there herself, and she's the CEO of Villages in Partnership.
Well, she's the executive director and the founder. She was over there for a year with her husband, who is a Presbyterian minister at First Presbyterian Church of Allentown in Allentown, New Jersey.
Oh, listeners here in the Lehigh Valley, did you know there's an Allentown, New Jersey?
They went over there for a year with his job, and I think she visited the villages, and she started this whole organization, and it has really grown under her leadership.
So. Do you know why she chose Malawi particularly? Is it the high Christian proportion of people? Or?
Well, I think her husband accepted this ministership in Blantyre, mm-hmm. and she brought her children with her. So the four of them went. Two of their children went with them. And then I think while she was there, she got involved with the villages, which, as I said, is quite a drive from this commercial center of Blantyre. Call it the Sakata region.
Yeah.
And the population that's living in that area is, extreme poverty. I mean, less than 80% of the people are living on less than a dollar a day in that region. And I think, as she has said to us, and, we agree, once you see, you can't unsee it. And I think she felt like even small acts can make a difference. And so she got this organization started to try and help those people living in those villages. And we're 16 years later, we're seeing still the signs of what needs to be done, but also we saw tremendous progress on what this organization mm-hmm. has done in their tenure.
Mother Teresa said, "We cannot do great things, but we can do small things with great love."
Yes, I love that quote.
And that's what
it's a great quote.
This organization is about.
Yes, and they keep expanding and moving into new villages. But one of the most impactful things when we got there, Liz said she was going to show us a level one poverty family and then a level two poverty family. So we had home visits with them. The first level one was a woman named Beatrice, and she's a single mother with four young children. And we got to her home, and it was a small, kind of a hut that she built herself with bricks she made herself and a thatch roof with, she did have a little bit of plastic tarp up there.
Was there just one room in the hut?
It was basically one room, but there was a small wall dividing another room, and one about a quarter of the room of the house was where the goats would sleep at night.
The goats?
Yes.
And be inside?
Yes. And that was the first kind of initiative that she is taking up with Villages in Partnership, is this goat project where they give a couple of goats to a family, and then they are asked to pass on one of their offspring to another family. So she's just starting to work with Villages in Partnership. So that's why she was level one. They slept on the dirt floor. They cook over an open fire. If it was a rainy day, she would have to cook in that little hut. They grow their own food. So we could see the poverty. Some of her children did look malnourished. They seemed a little sad. And so we had a nice visit with the family. Her extended family and neighbors came over and also talked with us. And she basically shared how difficult life is for her.
Becky, we're going to continue after a short break.
Yes.
So I'm talking with Becky and John Taka, who have made a trip over to Malawi in Africa and with the organization Villages in Partnership. Hang in there, dear listeners, and we'll be back in a moment.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Villages in Partnership is our topic this evening on Perspectives by John Pierce. So Villages in Partnership, two organizations, one mission, to share challenges, solutions, and resources to equip people to lift themselves from extreme poverty. Villages in Partnership USA is a New Jersey-based 501c3 nonprofit that is responsible for all U.S. operations, partner development, and fundraising. And so International is a Zomba, Malawi-based non-government organization that oversees all program operations and partner development in Malawi, along with adherence to all Malawi government regulations and procedures. Oh, there's some red tape involved here. These organizations are governed by two separate board of trustees aligned under VIP's mission and core values. And what I found was to let you know that it's not just a tiny organization. The USA board has 17 members. The international board has 6. There's a staff of 22, support staff of 3, and community workers of 8 over in Malawi itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, before we went to our break, Becky, you were talking to us about Beatrice.
Yes.
The single mother.
Yes.
With 4 children.
Right.
Living in a hut.
And like I said, she was just starting to work with Villages in Partnership and with the GOAT Project. And I'm hoping that with more time, she will get out of poverty, out of the level one. We then went to another family, the Tudy family, who would be considered a level two level of poverty. And we could see a huge difference. They were early adapters to a lot of the programs that VIP offers. And you could just walking into to their home, they had multiple homes, bigger homes. Their extended family, they lived together. Lots of children, happy, running around. They had livestock, a cow, and chickens. You saw bikes there, so now they have transportation. They're not walking, they're using bicycles. They had an outdoor kitchen to cook in.
So the idea is to try to have people move from level one to level two.
Correct, yeah. Yes.
And you know, from a U.S. perspective, even level two appears poor. We had read this book, and they have talked about it as well. Hans Rosling wrote this book, Factfulness. It was published 7 or 8 years ago. It was on the New York Times bestseller list. And he's the one who really categorized these 4 income levels throughout the world. So level 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the vast majority of the United States is at level 4. And sometimes when you look at level 4, when you're living at level 4 or you experience level 4, you don't really notice the differences in the levels below you. He talks about it's like being in a tall building and in a big city, and as you look down from the tall building, you don't necessarily, it's tough to judge the differences in the heights of the buildings below. But for the people, it's a huge change to go from one level to the other, mm-hmm. and the way they live. And the tools that it takes to get there from level one to level two, and the training that it takes to get from level one and level two is really what the mission of VIP is, to try and help those people find a way to get from level one to level two. And we saw it. We talked about pictures. We took a lot of pictures, but you could see the real difference in the looks on the children's faces in the pictures. Yeah. When we were taking pictures of Beatrice's family versus taking the pictures of the Tudy family that we saw next.
Mm-hmm.
And what about education for the children?
Yes, yes. That is one of the focus areas of VIP. They work with children from preschool all the way up to university level. We visited a preschool, and we got to see exactly how they run their preschool. They basically, Villages in Partnership built the building, but the community they get volunteers to become the teachers. Now, they did give them a little training for how to teach a preschooler, like, and they really loved showing us their little school. And they were kind of explaining, you know, in this area we do art projects, in this area we do use manipulatives, or this area the children can role play, just like you would see in a preschool in the United States. But the big difference was they didn't have all of the toys and books and things that we have. So in the manipulative station, where we would probably have like Legos and wooden blocks, they were using corn husks or sticks to build with. And in the art station, they had different, just things that they had made from berries and to paint. And just, it was just humbling to see how that they were trying to educate these little preschoolers with the materials that they have.
Are the preschoolers going to this in the same building as older children?
No, it was a separate little building. One thing about Villages in Partnership, when they get into the villages, they listen first. They listen, and then they act together with the people. And there's different village chiefs. So in this particular village where we sell the preschool, we met the chief. She came out to greet us, and she was a woman. And she basically, I think, when she talked to Villages in Partnership, she talked about needing a preschool. So that's how they ended up building that building. She also was talking to us, now she wished she had a kitchen or a place where they could cook food for the preschool. But in one way, it was, they had these volunteer teachers, but it was also almost a little bit of a daycare, because the parents then could do some work while their children were at this preschool. So I felt like it was a little helping out the families in that way.
Yes, indeed.
So, and we also visit the secondary school, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, Villages in Partnership helped fund the building of a secondary school and worked with the local government to get it staffed with teachers. And, you know, they did this 3 years ago for the secondary school. And so they have a high school system similar like we have in the United States. So the first year it opened, they just had, you know, the ninth grade year. And then the second year was open 10th and then 11th. And then this is the first year, actually, when we were there, that they had students that had gone through the whole secondary school and had worked with the teachers that Villages in Partnership had helped recruit. And the way university selection is done across the country is they have standardized testing. And historically, no one from the villages ever scores high enough on those tests to be able to go to the schools, the secondary school, the universities in the cities, in the capital or in Blantyre. And when we were there, they had just found that those students that had gone through the school, the first group of students that had gone through the school, it was eight or nine had qualified for university.
Ooh.
And it was, I mean, they were celebrating. We happened to be there. They were like thrilled that these students had done well enough on this testing. And it was the first time anyone from these remote villages had ever qualified for the national university.
A huge step forward.
It was. And it was unique to be at the school. The building was very nice. They had a science lab that they had raised money, and they were doing experiments with electricity while we were there. And so it was just amazing to see. But then in the corner of the classroom, you see all these like hoes and shovels, and they were explaining to us the students take care of the grounds. That's part of their job. They have to go out, and then they have to like take care of the grounds and work at
right
the
around the school.
They don't have a landscaping
they
team.
They don't have like
the students have to take care of their own
and
stuff.
It was really nice to see.
At the schools, now we've talked about a preschool and then a high school. Is there indoor plumbing there?
At the high school, there was. Yes, there was.
Okay. But not at the preschool.
No, the preschool was also built more like one of the brick huts.
Okay.
An open room, dirt floor.
And one room schoolhouse, we would call it.
Yes, yes. And they had quite a few little preschoolers in there. Yes, okay. All in one
room. And for the high school, did they have different rooms in the building?
They did.
Yes.
They did. Yeah, it was a really nice building. And Villages in partnership through private funding built that for the area. So they collected the money and they managed the construction and built it. But the staffing of it comes from the local government organizations. As Becky said, they listened to the local government. They said, we need the infrastructure. So they helped provide the infrastructure and then worked in a partnership to make sure it was staffed and helping the families in the area.
And right now, like I said earlier, they would like to build a dormitory for the girls right now to live at the school. There were so many bikes. The children have to ride great distances to get to this school.
So this is high schoolers.
Yes. Yeah. This is the high school called One Heart Secondary School. They found that, first of all, you know, for the safety of the girls riding the bikes back and forth to their villages, and also the girls have a lot of chores to do when they get home and
in their culture.
So once again, they listened, and the school, they're saying, you know, we would really like to have a place where the girls can stay and they don't have to go back and forth and they can really concentrate on their studies. So that's what they're trying to do now, to build a dormitory for the girls. And I suppose then eventually the boys will have a dormitory too, but they're focusing on the girls right now so that they could stay at school and concentrate on their studies during the week and then go home on the weekends to help work with the family.
And the families are mostly farmers?
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, Villages in Partnership is trying to help them become more productive farmers. They actually invested in a 55-acre demonstration farm. Early on in the process, they were teaching the local villagers new techniques, new fertilizers, new things to improve their yields so that they could raise some money. And, you know, they had a lot of resistance from the local villagers because they knew what they were doing was keeping their family alive, and to try anything different, if it failed, I mean, their lives were on the line. So to overcome that resistance, they invested in this, you know, put money that they had raised into this demonstration farm where they do side-by-side comparisons and bring the villagers out and teach them, you know, if you use this fertilizer versus that fertilizer, this is the different, we will show you, here's what we did in this space, here's what we did in the other space. They also worked with the villagers to build an irrigation system. As an engineer, I was amazed. They built these very large wells. They have pumps that are powered by solar panels, and they fill large tanks when the sun's shining, and then they basically double the growing season.
Oh, so that's really advanced kind of thinking.
And so the farmers that are operating these irrigated fields then can get two crops in a year instead of just one, and increase their income level and even sell some crops, not just provide subsistence for their family.
Becky and John Taka have been my guests this evening. Would you believe our time is up?
Okay.
And it's really exciting to hear what you have observed over in Malawi in Africa with Villages in Partnership. If any of our listeners wants to get in touch with Villages in Partnership, I would say just go to the computer and put in Villages in Partnership.
Yes.
And you have a lot of information there.
Yes.
Is that the best way?
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Well, best of luck in your retirements. I think you're enjoying them already.
See Como.
Yes.
Thank you.
And kudos for your 42-year marriage.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
So that's it for Perspectives for this time. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks to Neil Heaver for being our engineer this evening. I'm John Pierce. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.